When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 183 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. What a start of the season. We were all looking forward to it. We spoke a couple of times over the last 6 or 7 days or so, building up to the home game against Fulham. Everton come away with a 1-0 defeat in a game that we quite clearly bossed, to be honest with you. Better side, I think most people would agree with that. Always frustrating to come away from Goodison Park when you have been a better side and had so many clear-cut chances and not get at least a point. That's the big thing to take from it. But Pete, me and you were there, of course. We had a long chat before the game with our pies, as we always do. Obviously, team news filtered through. Obviously, we had Michael Keane got the nod over Jared Branthwaite. Neil Mopey started up front. No Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the squad as well, which was also a bit of a blow. How did you feel before we even go into the game? How did you feel that news was taken when we were floating around the fan zone and they announced the team?
Well, I think firstly we called it on the podcast last week, didn't we? In terms of what it would do to the fan base and potentially also the players if we weren't starting with, you know, what we might consider to be an out and out number nine, you know, a striker that can allow us to play the way that, you know, Dyche is intending Everton to set up and play. And you could almost feel it kind of filter through the fans as the team news came through. And rightly or wrongly, I think it was, you know, it was really unhelpful, but arguably the reaction is justified, as what, you know, as we might come on to talk about. I mean, we were just discussing before recording that if we took some of the chances that with Stonewall that we should have put away yesterday, we may well be having a different conversation today. And it's easy to scrutinise decisions when arguably you lose a game on, you know, her line moments. But I don't understand the persistence with Mopey in that role based on, you know, his performances under two different managers. And I think his return for minutes and his return for starts when you've got, say, you know, Lewis Dobbin, who's fit and, you know, in form, scoring goals pre-season. Maybe he's trying to protect the lad, but, you know, focus on his development. But I think probably the feeling of frustration was, surely we've got better options than the Mopey. And I think those decisions inevitably come under immense scrutiny when you end up losing the game.
And understandably so, of course. You know, we would look back differently on the game if we stuck one of our chances away or two of our chances away, of course. I've said it all the way through with Neil Mopey that I felt sorry for him coming in, because we signed a player who was not a lone striker into a club that plays with a lone striker. He's half the size of what our strikers should be and what that Dominic Calvert-Lewin is in particular. So he's not the profile for Everton and the way that we played under Lampard, under Sean Dyche. So it was always a strange signing for me, which is not his fault. You know, if Brighton wanted to sell him, which they did, and Everton wanted to pay the money for him, which we did, then, you know, he's happy to come to another Premier League club, and he thought himself obviously get some more game time. And I do massively, and I have always felt sorry for him in that particular side of things. And when the team does come out, and, you know, we'd seen Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who built up his minutes, and he was saying this week, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to go. And then the manager said after the Sporting game, not sure if he's going to be in and around the squad for the Fulham game. And we were like, well, what's going on here? Sure, if you want to build up minutes as part of his rehab, even off the bench for sort of 15, 20 is going to be helpful. Didn't happen. Now, there's conflicting stories. His partner may have had the baby this week at some point, potentially. And also, Sean Dyche said after the match yesterday that he's now coming to the end of his rehab as of yesterday, if you like. So when it comes to Aston Villa next week, we should be seeing Dominic Calvert-Lewin in some way, shape or form. So it was always a little bit deflating when we had an expectation that maybe he would be in and around the squad, that maybe the manager would give Jared Branthwaite the nod over Michael Keane after seeing him come on against Sporting. And like I said last week, gives us that balance of it, having a left footer and a right footer against James Tarkowski at the back. Didn't happen. But first game of the season, you know, the enthusiasm and the enjoyment of being back inside Goodison Park, I don't think it was majorly hit, but obviously it was the kind of thing that people do think about. And unfortunate for him, unfortunate for us, because we're finding ourselves in a similar situation that we did last season, where the same kind of shortcomings are still there. The biggest shortcoming being is we haven't addressed the striker situation. With the best will in the world of obviously Youssef Tchimiti coming in over the last couple of days, we had the podcast obviously with Aaron discussing obviously the profile of this kid. You know, he's 19 years of age. He's not going to come in and be starting week in, week out. He's going to need time to settle and adjust to English football, and he's a project. But the shortcomings are, first game of the season, we haven't brought in a striker that we said we needed, who can play in the same way Dominic Calvert-Lewin does when he's not fit. So that's what we're looking for the last 2 years, and we haven't got it. But onto the game, and it's got to be said, like I said at the start of the show, Everton were the better side. We started the game, I thought, particularly well the first 5 minutes or so, and the chances that we had, you know, Neil Mope, a great effort with it inside the first couple of minutes. You know, he's quite wide, fires the ball across the keeper first time, goes a couple of inches wide of the post, look lively, and you thought, this is a sign of things to come. Then we have a great chance where there's an Onana plays the ball through to Abdoulaye Doucouré. And that, for me, that miss is unforgivable. 1v1, all the time in the world, on his strong side, and he literally rolls it to, you know, and the keeper saves it with an outstretched foot. And that's the start of the game. You think, Everton are on it today. Everton have got a real good chance. We started really well. But Lee, when you miss those kind of chances early, and we'll come on to the other chances shortly as well, it creeps in. That doubt creeps in, doesn't it? Because we look at what we missed last season and the games that we threw away last season and games that we think that we should have won. And I felt, when we missed those early chances, there was a little bit of a switch in the crowd. And you thought, oh, here we go again.
I was about to say, not only does that translate to the players, obviously it comes from the crowd mainly, doesn't it? Because obviously we all know then, going, right, how many chances do we need here before we score the first goal? And we've said it, in the current guys we are right now, and I think we even called it, didn't we, that it was going to be a 0-0 or 1-0 type of game. But then if you watch those first 5 minutes, I genuinely think if we'd have took one of those early chances, we probably would have gone on to win comfortably 2 or 3-0, and it'd have been like, you know, a standard 3 points home victory. And, you know, like you said, we started very, very bright. Dyche, I think, is a big advocate, isn't he? Especially at home, of just trying to start fast, trying to get an early goal. I forget which team it was against now. You guys have got a better memory than me. When McNeil scored after about 30 seconds last season, didn't he?
Brentford.
The Brentford game. And then obviously that instantly transforms the nature of the game from the off. And I just think the Doucouré one, I've watched it back, and you know, it's a brilliant ball from Onana, like you said. His first touch is brilliant because that takes the defender out of the game straight away. Now he's one-on-one. And he can see James Garner to his right-hand side. You can see him. He's right. It's not as if he's in his blind spot. Do you know what I mean? You can see him right there. Now, I know it's a split-second decision, but I've said this a million times. Top players there, just literally instantly, whether it's outside of the foot, inside of the foot, just roll it to him. It's a tap-in. It's 1-0. And, you know, you are right. You should have scored still. But when you look at it, it's very good goalkeeping as well, isn't he? He's done that sort of manoeuvre where you're almost doing the semi-splits, aren't you, with your feet to, you know, stop yourself being Meg, number one, and also make yourself bigger. And it's a good save. And Bernd Leno, I mean, you know, you can criticise him as a keeper, but he is very good. He's a good, very good shot stopper in that respect. He's got other weaknesses to his game, but he's a very good shot stopper. And he obviously showed that yesterday. But like you guys were alluding to then, I mean, you know, what preceded that for the next, you know, 43, 44 minutes was basically Everton, you know, particularly on the counter-attack, by the way, looking very, very dangerous. You know, when we were asked to build up and try and score, you know, when Fulham was set in a position, we weren't quite as threatening or anywhere near as threatening. But when we won the ball back off them and broke, you know, we were creating so many clear-cut chances. And, you know, on reflection now, yesterday I was annoyed because I was just like, you know what, this was a winnable home game to get the season off on the right footing, like we said last week. We all knew the second game away to Villa is going to be a really tough game. And I know they lost heavily against Newcastle, but if you watch that game, they gave as good as they got until midway through the second half, if you like. But then all of a sudden, though, boys, you then, you know, going into a winnable home game again against Wolves. And then all of a sudden now, it's pressure, isn't it? It's pressure now going, you know, by not winning this game when we should have done, and we probably would have done 8 or 9 times out of 10, suddenly we're going into the Wolves game now, knowing full well, going, right, well, this is almost like a must-win game, and it's the third game of the season. You know, we certainly don't want to go potentially the first 3 games without any points. Do you know what I mean? So it that's what's frustrating. And Mike, you mentioned there about Calvert-Lewin, and, you know, Dyche has this program, doesn't he, where everyone has to be sort of, you know, match fit or whatever he calls it, you know, his fitness program that he does pre-season.
Dyche fit is a different Dyche level.
Fit. Yeah,
110% so then, fit, you got to be.
Yeah. Well, and in fairness, at times yesterday, I did think we looked really fit and lean. And we looked, you know, we did look a bit fitter than them, I thought, at times yesterday. But the point I was saying is that, and you just alluded to that, how is Dom supposed to build up his minutes if he's not even on the bench? You know, and he started against Sporting the other day. He gave us 45 minutes. I thought he looked fairly sharp, to be fair, considering he hasn't played many games. He scored the goal, penalty, well taken. And I think that's, for me, yesterday, I would have been so inclined. I mean, worst case, have him on the bench, but I would have been so inclined just to give him even 45 there again, or 60 tops. And look, we all know with Dom, you know, we're talking about Domi as if he's like, you know, Harry Kane in terms of clinical finishing. He's not. We know he's not a clinical finisher, but he's obviously a much better finisher than Mope is. And obviously he brings you different dimensions to the game, as Pete was saying there, you know what I mean, in terms of what he offers as a number 9. But I just think that if Dom plays for the first 45 or 60, like I said before, I think we comfortably win that game. You know, and even little Tom Cannon, who's, for me, you know, he's probably one of the most natural finishers we've got at the club right now. You know, and he's shown, I mean, he's only a young lad, so he's got a lot of developing to do, and he will go on loan, looks like Preston, before the end of the window. But for me, he looks a real natural finisher. You know what I mean? A real natural finisher. And again, you know, when he brings Dan Gima on, you know, to play through the middle. I mean, Dan Gima, for me, I've only seen little bits of him, but from what I've seen already, he's going to be better operating off the left as a winger, isn't he? He's not going to be through the middle, number 9. So no, him bringing him on there, playing him through the middle, I'd have brought him on out wide and then even brought Tom Cannon on to play through the middle.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about Dan Gima, and I was at Stoke when he played 45 and he started sensibly, but he always wanted to be left and he quite often would hang left. Did it once, I think, against Fulham yesterday, where he went left, played the ball, and then stayed there. But it leaves a gaping hole in the middle. So naturally, he's just not a central striker. So that's what I'm saying. You know, if Calvert-Lewin was in the squad, and you bring on Dan Gima left and Dominic Calvert-Lewin up front, it gives that front line a whole different feel, doesn't it? And that's why the confusion is, how can Dom go from playing 45 minutes against Monza 45 minutes against Sport and Lisbon, and then not be in the squad against Fulham. I know it's a different intensity, of course. It's the first game of the Premier League season, but he still must have 10 or 15 minutes in his legs and be okay. You know, Dan Juma had a knock. He hasn't played much in pre-season. He missed the Sporting game, but then was on the bench and came on and played 20 minutes yesterday. You know, you look at Tom Cannon has had injuries over the last 2 weeks. He hasn't been in any of the pre-season squads, but then he was on the bench. So it does, and I understand that there's a caution around Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and I'm sick of having the conversation about him, to be honest with you, because the reason that we do is because we haven't recruited correctly over the last 2 years, and we're still now, after game one of the Premier League season, after us saying we can't afford to throw games away, so therefore we've got to recruit correctly and before the first game of the season. We haven't done, and we're in that same situation. And that's why when you look at social media especially and the initial reaction to yesterday's game, and like you said, then, you know, if we go to Villa and lose that game, which is possible, of course, they're a very good side. You then go home to Wolves and think, Jesus Christ, this is a big game. The pressure's building. And we're in that mindset because we don't trust those behind the scenes. And this is not a go at Kevin Thelwell. I mean those above Kevin Thelwell, to get the right players in. He's identifying players, it's quite clear. And he's identifying the right players with the names that are being leaked, the names that we've discussed ourselves. He is trying to get the right profile of player in. The strikers that are being linked, whether we like it or not, like Che Adams, he's ideal in terms of that particular role. The likes of Beto at Udinese, ideal to come in, and he can come in from the off in that particular role. Even in it to a lesser extent, Mikel Antonio is a bulldozing centre forward. He's a big lad. He's a big strong kid. He's muscular. Not a fantastic goal scorer in the last 12 months, but that kind of player, they're looking at the right names as far as I'm concerned. And Iheanacho, another one. Daka, another one. Makes perfect sense. But we're not getting these deals done when they need to be done. And that's why the conversation around Calvert-Lewin is happening every single week, every single fan podcast, fan channel. We hear the same conversations. And I want to not have the conversation, to be honest, because the day that we don't is the day when he's fit and we've also got the relevant backup. And this week coming up is massive. Either Dominic gets back in the round of the squad, which we hope that he will be, but also this other striker has got to be close to be coming in. It's got to be done because we can't afford to keep on losing points. But
I just on that point quickly, I just don't want us to throw away points like we did last season, mate, in August. I just don't want us to do it. And we've had a kind start, one of the best starts. You know, the first eight games, there's a lot of winnable games there. Luckily, I think we played five or six games before the end of the window last season. I think luckily there's only four league games, I think. Is it four? Three, four? And a cup game. And I just don't want us to throw it away. You know, yesterday, a lot of frustration in the fact that, you know, Fulham haven't really strengthened. But then on the same note, you know, they took their forward off in Jimenez, their new signing. You know, it could be a cute bit of business because he's a number nine. And he was unlucky not to score himself in a way. One of the only other chances Fulham created, he hits the post. And you know, they bring on Mitrovic. I know Mitrovic is on the verge of potentially leaving, but that's the difference right there. They brought Andres Pereira on. So those two came off the bench. You know, and then Deco Dover-Reed, all three of them had an impact in the game, didn't they? You know what I mean? And then, you know, what are we looking at? And I understand it's difficult to negotiate in the window. We all know that because we haven't really got much cash up front. But, you know, that we've thrown away 3 points there for me yesterday. And it's an ideal opportunity to, you know, get the fans pulling in the right direction. And because we know it's on a precipice, don't we? If we lose the first few games of the season, we all know how it's going to... Suddenly the pressure is so ramped up that it becomes almost unbearable, doesn't it? You know what I mean? It's already, like you said, because we just don't know. The last two seasons of show, we've stayed up by the skin of our teeth. You know, that's not a coincidence, is it?
No, it's not. But, I mean, let's go back to the game because, you know, we say that we've thrown 3 points away. Yet we have. And you can even look beyond recruitment for yesterday's game because it wasn't even so much not having brought in certain players, it's about the players who are playing, taking a responsibility and scoring goals when they're in positions to score goals. We mentioned the core, right? You know, in the first half alone, you look at the chances that Mope had. I thought one, the point blank one, I'm a little bit more forgiven with because it's difficult. The keeper's a yard from you. So that's hard. The keeper's, you know, he's got the advantage there. But the one where he's played through for a 1v1, he's got to score. You know, he's just got to score. And it's when we're missing those kind of chances. But then when you throw into the mix, and I've got to come on to it, Pete, because at the time I was baffled sitting there yesterday. And when Bert Leno drops the ball after coming over his own defender and drops it onto James Tarkowski, it then rolls to Michael Keane, then slots the ball on the back of the net. I, for the life of me, could not believe that goal didn't stand. And since you know we got into the car and I've watched replays and things like that, even now you can't convince me that goal shouldn't have stood.
No, definitely, and it's just infuriating, isn't it? First game of the season, and already you're talking about a controversial disallowed goal against Everton. It's unbelievable. When I saw it in real time, I couldn't believe it had been disallowed because you could see by the way that the keeper had come. Leno claimed the ball. If you watch closely, the Fulham defender comes in between him and Tarkowski first. So Tarkowski isn't challenging for the ball. He's not obstructing the keeper. If anything, he's got his arms pretty much down by his side, and he's stationary. So how that's an infringement, I do not understand. And when I was in the stadium, I was aghast, thinking, why has it not gone to VAR? And I think you pointed out that the referee may have blown before the ball had gone in. But then when I've been reading it post-match, it seems like it did go to VAR, and VAR seemed to agree with there being an infringement. So I don't know what's happened, but it's a catastrophe. It's absolutely bizarre because, you know, again, we go 1-0 up, it completely changes the face of the game. And I agree with Lee. I think if we would have got the first goal, particularly in the first half, based on our momentum, I think we would have gone on to win the game fairly comfortably. But yeah, I just hope this isn't going to become a theme, because, you know, in the podcast over the last two seasons, we've counted up these kind of nearly moments, haven't we? You know, games where either a terrible decision's been made that's gone against us and we've ended up not getting something from the match, or, you know, and I suppose this equally applies to the game, doesn't it? Games where we've not quite taken our chances, or when we've been on top, we've not made it count. And over the last two seasons, that they've become little patterns and themes that have put us in a terrible position. And of course, you don't want to catastrophize after the first game, but you just think you hope this isn't a continuation of that pattern. I think the performance yesterday gives me enough confidence that hopefully it's not. But that decision was just a complete mess, and it, you know, it doesn't help our cause at all when we're looking to try and reset and break the pattern of the past two seasons. But it's just another one on the pile of disgusting refereeing decisions that have gone against Everton that will get almost zero media attention. Whereas, you know, if this happened to one of the Sky favourites, this clip would be, you know, replayed and shared in viral forums for the rest of the season.
I think that, to back up your point on chances and things like that as well, Pete, and you know, not taking them as well, is Mike Greenall put a term on Twitter this morning. Mike, you've probably seen it, Mike. But since Dice has come in, and I know this is obviously, and even Dice referred to XG the other day after the game, didn't he? But since Dice has come in, our non-penalty XG created is 26.6. So basically, outside of pens, we should have scored 27 goals under him, and we've scored 17. So that's, you know, sometimes you overperform XG. Obviously, we're clearly underperforming XG here. So, you know, we're 10 goals shy of what we should, you know, in terms of should be creating. I mean, that tells you we're creating the chances since he's come in, by the looks of it, in a lot of games we have. And other than the Brighton game where we were clinical, we haven't scored enough goals. I mean, I saw a stat yesterday that other than the Palace game, we didn't score more than one goal at home all season. I mean, I mean, that is, my mind can't even comprehend that. Do you know what I mean? Everton, who have got a fantastic following at home, one of the most raucous grounds in the country. You know, think of the games we've had in the not too distant past with the size we've had and the goals we've scored. You know what I mean? And you know, we only scored more than once at home against Palace. I mean, this is
why we keep on saying, don't we? You know, and we had the same conversation yesterday, me and Peace, before the game. If we go 1-0 down, we don't win the game. And the fans' mindset then shifts to, if we get a point here, we're doing really well. You know, and this is where it's always, you know, with such fine margins. And that's why if that Michael Keane goal is allowed to stand, which it should have been, and you go in a half time 1-0, Everton win the game. I've got no doubt Everton win the game. Because I thought Fulham, what do you have, 9 shots throughout the game? Bar the one where they hit the post, didn't they, before they scored the goal. It wasn't long before they scored the goal. They didn't threaten, for me. They had a lot of the ball and a lot of huffing and puffing. I thought Everton defended quite well, to be perfectly honest. I thought we did okay. After the first sort of 15 minutes, when I thought we were a tiny bit open at times through midfield, but I thought we adjusted ourselves and we got ourselves into a position where we felt defensively strong. And I never thought, I thought personally, even when it was 0-0, Just before they got their goal, I thought this is going to be 0-0. I just thought we'll get a point here, it'd be 0-0. But that's the concern, is that, you know, we haven't got the players then in the squad. We haven't got that squad depth to, when we do go 1-0 down, to then go, it's okay. We've got this player, that player, that player, they go and scores a goal. And that's the big problem, isn't it? The fact that we haven't got, looking at the bench yesterday, you had Dan Juma, you had Lewis Dobbin, you had Tom Cannon. They're your attacking threats, aren't they, effectively? Now, none of them, as things currently stand, have scored a goal for Everton. I think I'm right in saying that. So, straight away, you think, well, it's all well and good, by the way, Lewis Dobbin having a good pre-season, which he has. But he's a young kid. He's going to be loaned out again. It's no good that people pinning their hopes on Lewis Dobbin coming on and making a difference, because it's difficult. The Premier League is a really difficult league, and he needs more time, game time, in a lower division, playing man's football over the course of 9 months. That's what he needs. Tom Cannon's the same. Good season at Preston. Scored goals, of course. He needs to go back to Preston or back somewhere else. Now, I know why we haven't let him go, because we haven't brought anyone else in the last... Well, I know Timothy came in, but we haven't brought in another senior striker. But these players have got to be moved so they're allowed to develop, and then potentially come back and make a difference in 12 months' time, maybe a little bit longer. So that's what we had on the bench, and that's where the problem is. You know, we know the issues. The issues have been there for the last 2 years, and it hasn't yet been addressed. We haven't got the players in who can give us that squad depth and make us a better, well-rounded side. And as Sean Dyche keeps on saying, give us that balance. You know, but
on that point, though, with Tom Cannon, if I'm Tom Cannon there, and I'm sitting on the bench, and I back myself... Right, I back myself. I'm a forward. I had a good season last season at Preston at a decent level. Okay, it's not the Premier League, but it's a decent level of football. I scored goals. I'm sitting on the bench there thinking and looking at those chances that, you know, Mope, my counterpart's missing. I'm sitting there going, get me on that pitch. You know what I mean? If you back yourself, you are, aren't you? You're sitting there going, get me on that pitch. I want to score here. I want to score here and win us this game. You know, and no doubt he will have that type of mindset. You don't get to his stage in his career, you know, and get on the cusp of being a Premier League player without having a good mindset. Do you know what I mean? So, and I'm sitting there going, I would have buried that. I'd have buried that. You know, give me on the pitch. Whether he says that to the, you know, he probably won't do because of his age and whatever to Sean Dyche. But I'd be sitting there going, how am I not getting on here? You know, we've got a striker on here right now who showed last season. I think, how many goals did he get last season? One goal. You know what I mean? In God knows how many minutes last season. Now, we don't play to his strengths, like you said, but I'm sitting there going, get me on. And that, you know, you talk about the second half. Obviously, we weren't as good in the first half, in the second half as we were in the first. But like you said, we pretty much had Fulham at arm's length, didn't we? Really, most of the game. And then, you know, the chances we had, you know, the Patterson one, you know, in particular, you're just sitting there going, how has he laced that? We spoke after the game, and I spoke to you guys. You were coming back from the game, and you know, every single all day of the week there, you just side foot that in, and it's a goal. And for some reason, he feels he needs to absolutely lash it with his laces. As soon as you lash it with your laces, anything can happen. You can slice across the ball. You know, you can do what he did, which is basically semi-sky it into the crossbar. He side foots that. He keeps it down. He gets his body over it, and it's a goal. Leno's on the floor. If you know, as good a game as Leno had, you know, it was a bad save, wasn't it? Because he pushes it back out into an area. You know, it wasn't really the best shot in the world from Iwobi either. He didn't really get hold of him. He's trying to put it in the far corner. And it's a tap-in. And I know that he's a right-back. Yeah, understand that. He's not on his side for goals. He hasn't really... His goal-scoring record's not great. But, you know, you've got to score, haven't you? You've got to score there. I mean, that of all the chances we had, of which there were some really, you know, top chances in that game, or big chances, as they call them now, he's got to score that himself. He's got to score. And he knew it himself, I think. He knew it himself straight away. You know, he couldn't believe he did a crossbar from that position, could he?
He was almost celebrating, because I was right in line with him in the paddock, and he'd almost turned away thinking it's in, you know, and then realised, obviously, I bit the bar. But, you know, that is... I said that on Twitter last night, and, sorry, X, as it's now called, if you want to give it the right name. And if you know, you can't just lay all the blame at Neil Mopey's door because he missed a few chances. Yes, he missed chances. He should have scored. There's no denying that. There's, I'm not getting away from the fact that he should have scored at least one goal yesterday, and I'm not. But then the Corey was just as culpable because he had a clear-cut chance. People seem to want to give him a free pass because he scored the goal against Bournemouth last season. It doesn't matter to me. We're in a new season now. If you're going through 1v1, like you say, the options are score or lay the ball to James Garner and he scores. It's unforgivable. We should have scored a goal. And the Patterson one is no different. I know he's a young kid. I know he's a right back. He's in that position. I would have scored it, and I'm left-footed. I would have scored it with my right foot. I'm not even messing. I would have scored it. You know, you could have even taken a touch and scored it, to be honest. But players have got to take a responsibility to win a game of football. You know, who's going to take the game by the scruff of the neck and go and try and get a goal for Everton? If you're going to put yourself in that position as a right back or as the Corey did, then take your chance. Because they weren't difficult. It wasn't, you know, at bad angles or, you know, it came to Patterson at a decent pace. But professional footballers, you've got to score a goal. So they're all as culpable for not winning that game yesterday. We should have won. We created 19 chances. We created some clear-cut chances. For those, I know Sean Dyche is not a big fan of XG. He said it himself. We do use it, he says, as a bit of a measuring stick, but not the be-all and end-all. But our XG was nearly 3 for the whole game. That's a big XG. I think it was the biggest since the 22-23 season of any side to not score a goal. So it's a bit, you know, there's some big chances being created there. But they're all to blame because they were spread throughout the team. You know, that's how it was. But it's not all negativity.
Fulham won a few games like last season, didn't they?
Yeah,
where they got hammered. They got hammered by teams, and somehow managed to win 1-0. And then in the end, you know, you'd say that type of luck in the end ran out for them, and they sort of, you know, I wouldn't say they capitulated, but they fell off, didn't they? They were in top 6 at one point, and then they fell off towards the end of the season. Because there's only so many times you can play those type of games and win, you know what I mean, and nick a 1-0. Marco Silva, obviously, you've got an affiliation with him slightly because he played, you know, he managed our team, but he'll know more than anyone getting on that team bus last night. Silva will know, literally going, we got away with one there, lads. We got away with one there. 3 points, you know, away at Goodison Park, first game of the season. We will take that. Thank you very much. Because, you know, they would have taken a point definitely as well halfway through the second half, wouldn't they? But on that point, before we finish, I mean, obviously we want to take some positives from it as well. But, I mean, you guys were there at the game. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but the goal, who's at fault for the goal there, do you think? Because how is a player 2 yards out from goal got no one near him? You know what I mean? It's bonkers. I mean, obviously, Patterson's been dragged into the middle. Is Michael Keane gone walking? Tarkovsky's attracted to the ball. Keane and Garner seem to be in the same sort of, you know, the same sort of realm trying to block Mitrovic, I imagine. So, I mean, how do you even dissect that? I mean, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
I think it's a combination, isn't it? You know, the ball has come down our left-hand side, their right. Players have been pulled over. Michael Keane's gone over. He's gone to the ball. So the player who played a three for Pereira, he's gone to the ball. Tarkowski's also over there. Patterson's then gone with Pereira, hasn't he, from memory. So then what's happened is they could overread is at the back post. James Garner's realised too late. As he's turned and thought, oh, hang on, I should be covering him. He's 10 yards behind him. That's the problem. They all went all over the place. It was poor defending. And it was literally moments after Dan Juma walked on the pitch. You know what I mean? But I'm not sure that had anything to do with it. But at a time when the manager makes the change to go, right, let's get Neil Mopey off. Let's bring on Dan Juma. Let's try and win the game. What can we do with, obviously, a fresh pair of legs on? A player who's obviously eager to try and prove something as well. And we go and concede straight away. So it was it was poor defending for me. You know, we should never have a player at the back post who's that wide open, you know, where the ball just basically gets scuffed across the goal, because it did, and he sticks it in. But it's not all doom and gloom, that's for sure. We've got to just take, there are positives from it, and those positives are we bossed the game, we should have won the game. On another day, we do win the game. And the next few weeks in the final part of the transfer window are absolutely vital to Everton's chances of being more competitive and having a more comfortable season. But let's finish off the Fulham game there. Obviously, we go away to Aston Villa next weekend, next Sunday, 2:00. I think it's live on Sky. They lost 5-1 to obviously a strong Newcastle side yesterday. So we're going to discuss that after this short break. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And like we said before the break, next game, next Sunday at Villa Park, always historically a difficult place to go, especially for Everton, that's for sure. Had a couple of good wins over the years there, but recently it has been a tricky place for us to go. I think we went there, was it second game of last season when Onana made his debut and we got beat, was it 3-1? He used to set up the own goal, didn't he, by Luca Dean, so... Similar time of the season again. We go there. And like I said, lost by 5-1. So obviously a strong Newcastle side who obviously are in a great bit of form, you know, carried forward from last season, got Champions League football, have recruited fairly well. But I thought it was going to be a really evenly matched game yesterday. And to be fair, for the first half or so, it was, you know, some early goals scored inside the first 15 minutes. I think it was 2-1 at that particular point. But once Newcastle got the third goal, obviously Tyrone Mings went off injured as well with a bad injury. Villa sort of capitulated a little bit then, I thought, which was a little bit unlike them, and I didn't really see it. Obviously, Emery, since he's come in there, has done some fantastic work, got them European football when they were fighting at the bottom of the table with us, you know, at the time that he came in. But I think we can sort of put that down as an anomaly, because I saw a bit of Villa in pre-season in that the Premier League summer series over in the States, and they certainly carry a real attacking threat. And looking at the likes of that new signing Diaby, obviously we know about Leon Bailey, Ollie Watkins, those three alone will cause Everton, and I've got all the ingredients to cause Everton some serious problems next weekend, that's for sure. But Pete, what's your take on Aston Villa? Were you as surprised as I was yesterday seeing them fall to that kind of defeat? You know, as I say, two pretty evenly matched sides, I thought, before the game kicked off. But they shipped a fair few goals yesterday, that's for sure.
I expected it to be goals galore. I didn't expect it to be 5-1. Because I think, as you say, they played pre-season, didn't they? And I think that was that game 3-3.
It was three all over in the States. That's right. They played each other.
Yeah. So, I was expecting to repeat the same scoreline, but I was expecting a similar type of game. But I think what completely changed the match was them losing Tyrone Mings. And although they could bring on a quality replacement, it seemed to really affect their game. And Newcastle just tore them to shreds. I think Villa was slightly fortunate. It was 5-1 because in the second half, Newcastle just had free reign and it was chance after chance. And if anything, I think they were probably slightly wasteful, says me, an Everton fan after yesterday. But I think you're right. I think we've got to take the match with a massive pinch of salt, because obviously be a completely different proposition when we play them. But they're going to be looking for a big response to that. You know, Villa will be really, really hurt by that. And I just hope it doesn't go against us. I think if anything, it would have been better for us for Villa to win 5-1 yesterday. I think it'll be a really, really tough game. My hope is that we might be a little bit more bolstered by having at least one key player back available for that game, which will hopefully give us a really big lift and enable us to play very differently. But I think Villa are an absolute force, and it's quite bitter to witness, really, because they were in a very similar position to us. Obviously, they've been able to bring in Emery. Arguably, they already had a very talented squad when Gerrard was manager, and it just, you know, clearly wasn't the right job for Gerrard, because he couldn't get a tune out of a very, very good group of players. And Emery has come in and shown how to do that. And then on top of that, they've continued to recruit really well. And it's not nice as an Evertonian to see them kind of climb up and be pushing for Europe again, because obviously that's where we all feel we should be. And where we were really what feels like 5 minutes ago. The last 2-3 years have just been a bit of an unreal blur that we're trying to scramble out of. But they look like a real quality side. You know, they've got balance, they've got footballers. And I just think Ollie Watkins is fantastic. I think he's a really underrated striker who just seems to continue to keep getting better and better. And I think now he will have better service this season. He could be a real force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, so totally agree, and that's why I do put yesterday down as an anomaly with Villa. You know, you look at the changes that they made. Obviously, we mentioned Tyrone Mings went off injured, who's been, I think, a bit of a revelation under Emery, and the Villa fans have been really impressed with his return to form, because he struggled. You know, he went through a bad patch, Mings, and I'm not his biggest fan, but I think he has massively improved under Emery. So it's a big loss for them. But then they bring on Pau Torres, who they just signed from Villarreal for big money. They bring on the likes of Coutinho. He obviously comes on. And, you know, you look at their bench compared to ours, and this is why I keep on going back to this and us not having any kind of squad depth. The changes that they can make, Tielemans comes on for Bailey. You know, I say, mentioned Pau Torres, mentioned Coutinho, Diego Carlos comes on. They've got such a strong bench as well that Everton have got to really, for me, got to really bring our A game. All you can see at the moment is potentially a repeat of what we saw there last season, you know, and we don't want to be, like we said earlier on the show, going there, difficult place, quite feasibly, we could lose our first two games of the season. When we were looking with a little bit, you know, of positivity before the season kicked off yesterday, thinking, well, you know, from these first maybe 3 or 4 games, 6 points, you know, we could quite easily get 6 points. You lose your first two games to then get 6 points. You've got to go and win your next two. And the pressure, you know, although it's only early, but given the history we've had in recent times, the pressure then potentially can start to build. But Lee, what are your thoughts on Villa in terms of obviously what you saw yesterday, what you saw the back end of last season, probably more importantly, is a better measuring stick and the recruitment that they've done in the summer as well. They look to have really improved what was already a really talented squad.
Yeah, I think you two have summed it up very well there. I'm a big fan of Unai Emery, or Emery, however you want to pronounce it. I don't think he was given a fair crack at Arsenal. He showed his pedigree, you know, particularly at the likes of Villarreal and Sevilla, you know, particularly in the Europa League as well, isn't it? His record is unbelievable. I think he's up there in terms of just below top-level coaches. You know, if you class it, you know, the likes of, you know, Carlo and others at the very top, he's certainly, you know, in the sort of, I'd say, alongside Ten Hag and a few others, in the level, but a level just below. And, you know, he showed how good he was coming in midway through a season. Villa were really floundering in the league, as Pete said then. And then, you know, he's got them into a European position, which is incredible. I mean, let's not get away from the fact Villa, you know, their net spend has been, I think, over 300 million, isn't it, the last 5 years. So they've spent a lot of money, and they've spent a lot of money again this window and strengthened well. I mean, Diaby, we've been linked with him in the past. I mean, you know, I know Baz from Toffee TV is like an absolute, you know, fanboy of him. But I mean, you can see already just little snippets of pre-season. Even yesterday, he got a goal. He's dangerous, and he's very dangerous. Him and Watkins on the counter, both rapid. They're going to cause a lot of problems this season. And to be fair, as Pete was suggesting yesterday, I'd ignore that Newcastle game. If you watch the first half, two very evenly matched sides. You know, I know they went in 2-1 down. But, you know, second half, I think the Mings injury, as Pete alluded to, that really did affect them. Pau Torres came on, who's a real, obviously, Emre knows him from his time at Villarreal. Really top centre-half. He came on, you know, and in a difficult circumstance, really, away at Newcastle, you're 2-1 down. And then second half, they sort of lost their way a little bit. And then Newcastle, you know, got ahead of steam. And, you know, Newcastle had 9 shots on target in the second half alone. You know, I mean, we think we obviously created a lot yesterday. We had 9 overall on target, you know, from that. So Newcastle, to be fair, you know, second half especially, absolutely ran away with it. But I wouldn't look too much into that. Villa, first home game of the season in front of their fans. You know what I mean? Villa Park, like you said, on Sky. So our record there in recent times hasn't been great, has it? You know what I mean? And it's a very tricky fixture. You know, in a sort of sea of decent fixtures to start with, that is probably the hardest one we've got, isn't it? Villa away. So, it, like I said before, it's just all the more frustrating that we've not got anything out of this game yesterday, because then it just cranks up the pressure. And look, we could go to Villa Park and get a point. You know what I mean? We could go there and win. Of course we can. But let's be honest, it's going to be a tough ask.
It is. And obviously, given the fact that we didn't pick anything up in yesterday's game, it becomes, you know, there's not loads of importance placed on the game, of course. We know it's a difficult place to go. We know Everton are not expected to probably go there and get anything from the game. But you just feel that, as I say, if you start a season with 2 defeats, the pressure does start to build, because you don't want to... The last thing we want as fans, and the last things I'm sure the players and the manager wants, is to be involved in another relegation battle. And you've got to start as you mean to go on, you know, and you don't want already looking at other sides, the likes of obviously Sheffield United got beat, Luton got beat, Forest got beat, those kinds of sides. And we're already looking at, you know, with them and seeing how they're getting on. So we've got to go there and take the positives that we got. You know, we there was plenty of positives against Fulham. We can't deny it. It's frustrating. It was a very frustrating game to not come away with anything at all, when we deserve to win the game. But that's down to the clear-cut chances that we missed. But as a side, they've got to look at that. And think, you know, to be fair, James Tarkowski came out after the game and said, listen, I thought we played well. We did so many good things. Obviously, the goal was disallowed as well, which he discussed. But, you know, you don't take your chances. You don't win a game of football. And it sounds really, really simple, but we created those chances. So it's important now to get the right players in and the right players back from injury so they can contribute. Because I have no doubt that yesterday, of those 5 chances, the 5 sort of clear cut, there was 3 sort of for Mope, Decorian and Patterson. I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin probably sticks 2 of them away, to be honest, out of those 5. So, and you'd find him centrally, and you'd find him in and around those positions. So I think if we can get him back fit, if we can get a couple of players in, I think our season will start to look a little bit more rosier. You know, the links are still there for the likes of Willy Nonso. Obviously, he seems to have gone on a bit of a strike as of a couple of days ago. Leeds are saying he's not for sale. Let's see what happens there. Jack Harrison's another one where the links have been there all the way through. Do we revisit that potentially? Suleiman, Southampton, another one. Beto at Udinese. You know, there was links again this morning to him. You know, let's get these players in. If we can do it, let's do it. You know, Damari Gray, we haven't mentioned them. Looks like Fulham signed Adama Traore yesterday after the game. Looks like any deal for Gray to Fulham probably won't happen. So probably Palace are a likely destination for him. Get the deals done. Get the money in. Let's reinvest. Let's make us a better side. And we know our shortcomings are in attack. You know, we're creating chances. We've got Dwight McNeil to come back in as well, who let's face it, was probably our best player in the second half of the season. So a lot of things to hold on to and a lot of positivity to take, but difficult place to go against a side who okay, confidence might be slightly dented by the defeat yesterday, but a side who I'm sure will be full of confidence because of the quality that they've got there and the fact that where they went from last season and where they got to was an incredible achievement, I thought. So yeah, very, very sort of weary going there. But Everton, it's important that we pull on to the positives from yesterday's game and not dwell on the fact that we did miss chances to win the game. But let's see what this week brings. Now, I banned predictions last week, didn't I? Because I said that they're having a negative impact on Everton in some kind of parallel universe. But seeing as we got beat, let's just bring it back. Now you can say win, lose or draw without even giving me a score prediction. But Peter, what are you thinking, Villa Park? What are your hopes?
Okay, can I give you a score prediction?
You can. Go on.
I'm going to do it. Do you know what? I'm going to be positive. I'm going to say 1-1. I think if Calvert-Lewin's available, I'm going to say we get something out of the game.
I like the positivity piece. I've got to be honest with you. Lee, you want to go along the same lines?
I love how you bring it back after 1 week absent. You said it's not going to happen. Not going to happen.
I know. I was just trying to change the universe, wasn't I?
Yeah. Comical in a way. I've just seen, by the way, a tweet before from Paddy saying that he asked Dyche why Calvert-Lewin wasn't playing. I wasn't even on the bench. And he said he's not at the end of his rehab. And he said, when does he finish his rehab? And he goes, he's finished his rehab. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Oh, my God. I really don't know what to say. I think, you know, there was plenty of positives from yesterday in terms of how we played and we've talked about that, and that was a shock result from Villa. I thought they would have got at least something at St James's Park, although a very difficult first fixture. So I just can't see us getting anything, lads. I'm going to say 2-1 Villa.
Oh well, back to the negativity. It was you last week, Pete. That was filled the podcast with negativity, and I was on cloud nine, looking forward to the season starting, and you brought me right back down to earth with a bump. And now Lee started as well. But no, let's be honest.
Get rid of the predictions, mate. That's the thing.
I know. But to be fair, though, it's a realistic outlook, really, isn't it? You know, we can still take things and go into that game and give a good account of ourselves and not win it, of course. You'd hope. I'd love to get a point there, really. But I think a point would be a real solid effort, and you know maybe we'll go there and play the way Fulham played, or not deserve anything from the game and come away with something. So I'm gonna go for a draw as well to be ultra positive. I'm gonna join you in the 1-1 camp, piece. I think that we can certainly get something from the game, provided we get a couple of players back in this week. So we expect, like Lee said there, Dominic Calvert-Lewin now at the end of his rehab, as of the full-time whistle yesterday, it seems. So we can come through training this week, get him in and around the squad. Obviously, Yusuf Chimiti, full week's worth of training, get him in and around the squad. As we said in the podcast last week, he's not the saviour. Not going to come in and start banging goals in and be the messiah. He needs time, he needs patience. And we'll afford him that. But it'd be good to get another fresh face in that squad, in the match day squad in particular. Can we move a couple of players out this week? Can we get one or two in this week? Remains to be seen. But I think any new additions, especially in the attacking areas, will be massively welcomed. That's for sure. As long as they improve the squad, that's the important thing. But that's us for today. It's us for this week. We'll be back ourselves after the Villa game. It'd be unusual for us to record probably quite quickly after the Villa game next Sunday, but we will do. So look back on that game. Hopefully look back on a positive week in terms of the transfer market for Everton as well. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues. Three Opinions. One Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.